Welcome to Therapy in 10, where Darcy and Hannah combine both their lived and professional experience to bring you a fresh take on mental health, tackling tough questions in just 10 minutes. Each episode is chock full of stories that will make you cry, laugh, and restore your faith. We're so glad you're here.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Therapy in 10. I'm Hannah and I'm here with my friend Darcy.
Hola, so glad you guys joined us.
Yeah, this is episode 3 of our Faithful Yet Struggling season, and today Darcy's going to start us out for a change.
Oh, so today's episode is Why Does God Hate Me? And we got that from the study or an article, and it said in 2015, the New York Times ran an article called Googling for God, and in this article, author Seth Stevens, David Owitz, started by saying, it has been a bad decade for God, at least so far. What questions do people have about God? The number one was, who created God? Okay, so that's not bad. That's just curiosity. Mm-hmm. Number two, why does God allow suffering? And number three, why does God hate me? Mm-hmm. So while this may seem awful, to me, it shows that someone believes in God or is at least a bit curious about our supernatural Father. And that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, lamentation is a proof of faith. After all, who are you lamenting to? Who are you complaining or whining to? My deepest spiritual growth has been born from the toughest days of my life and learning to rely and surrender to God alone. And I've come to see some of the fruit from the pruning that happened in those trials. I've only grown deeper in love with Christ. Mm-hmm. Guys, our circumstances and our struggles can certainly cause us to think God doesn't love us or care, that he's forgotten about us. But none of that is true. And we have to learn how to look at our trials as opportunities to lean into God, to learn more about him, to learn more about ourselves and what mm-hmm. we're capable of, and to trust him.
Yeah. This topic is just so, like, as with everything else that we're doing this whole season, I think it's just, like, so relevant. I would venture to guess that those questions are still very accurate today as to, like, what people are asking. So, you know, knowing me, I was like, I'm going to go see what auto-populates in Google when I type that now. What is this, like, 8 years later? I'm bad at math. Something like that. 2023. So,
That's right.
I literally went to Google and I typed, why does God, to see, like, what would all, you know, it auto populates, it gives you these like suggestions. Some of the things that popped, there was something about some lyrics to some song and something about something else. But this is what it says. Why does God allow bad things to happen? Why does God allow suffering? Why does God hate me? Why does God allow evil? Why does God love us? That's a good one. Why does God not answer prayers? Which, yeah. Why does God allow sickness? Why does God test us? Right. So like, and there was a couple of other ones thrown in there that didn't make a lot of sense to me, but so this is still like out there, right? Like clearly people are still searching for these same answers. And I was actually talking with a friend not that long ago about this very thing. And this, you know, person said that they just found it really hard to get on board with a God who is omniscient and knows all things before they happen, but doesn't stop bad things from happening, because what does that say about him? You know, and of course the answer to that question brings up a whole lot of like really deep theological ideas regarding whether or not humans actually have free will. And if God stopped all bad things from happening, wouldn't we all just essentially be puppets acting out everything in all these good ways that go against our actual human nature? But we're not going to go there today, at least not today. I will say though, you know, I personally have certainly faced many situations in which I found myself asking God why something's happening to me. And I know, Darcy, you have too, and you're going to talk more about that in a second. But for me, the answer as to why evil things happen is because we live in an evil world full of sin. That was not God's doing. It was man's, right? Darcy talked about in our episode last week, Adam and Eve brought sin into this world, which cursed us all for as long as we live on this earth. That is why bad things occur. You know, things so bad and painful that at times it can feel like our lives are a joke and that there must be some mistake, because it's just honestly not fair, right? God, you know, is good. He is, everything about his nature is good. The world we live in and everything about it, though, is pure evil. So while God does allow things to happen in order to, like, either draw us closer to him or teach us a lesson or something like that, we have to make sure we're keeping the right perspective about who God is behind all of that, right? And also, like, what he's doing with these bad things. You know, why does he allow it? Why does he, you know, obviously it's not because he hates us. But yeah, like, clearly these people, everyone, we're all just, people are asking the same questions, you know, why? We just want to know answers.
Right. So, I mean, with that said, obviously, like you said, this is very relevant. This is something, I mean, we're talking here, our series is Faithful Yet Struggling. Mm-hmm. The Bible is full of faithful yet struggling characters. The world is currently full of faithful yet struggling characters, you know? I know what it is to like to look at my circumstances, my dire situation, and think, you know, God doesn't like me anymore, doesn't care. Why hasn't he healed me, fixed this, et cetera? And I've been a believer since a little child, and yet I've still done those same exact questions, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But recently, because I've been through a process, really, really, really evaluating the trials that I've gone through and what the lessons and little jewels, I like to say that God has either shown me now later on that I've seen, oh, okay. So I went through this because, let's just say a very, very just basic example is because this particular trial built my perseverance. Because maybe later on, I'm going to have to persevere even more. You know, like it increased my perseverance. So recently, I've started to ask myself of, especially a recent trial when I went to the hospital in December, and I said, would I do it again if God asked me to? So I imagined that if I sat down and had a conversation with God and he said, Darcy, one of the reasons I sent you to the hospital was to have a talk with a particular man who is a child of mine who is very lost. If you knew that that was one of the fruits that would be born out of this trial, would you do it all over again? Now, first, I think my smart aleck self would say something like, God, you know, coffee shops are great places for conversations instead of mental hospitals. But then I hope I would say, oh, yes, Lord, immediately. Mm. You know, I don't know if I could say the same thing if it came to a trial such as losing a child, you know, all over again, or a spouse, but maybe I would do it all over again just so that I could have those moments with them, you know, again, like if that's what it meant. And so, but I have seen faithful people do amazing things in memory of a loved one, you know, legacies that have touched, you know, thousands upon thousands of people, all in the memory of someone they lost. And maybe we won't see any or all of the goodness that comes from a trial this side of heaven, but the temporal will turn into the eternal right before our eyes one day as we hear the words, well done, my son or daughter. And maybe things will finally make sense, or maybe we just have an overwhelming peace and exhilaration for eternity in heaven that we won't care what happened in hindsight. Not sure if he will answer all of our questions or just stuff a cookie in our mouth and say, go play. I'm going to guess for me that I'm just going to get a bag of Oreos and he's going to say, hey, go to the beach today. I don't know. So, because I always have a lot of questions there. But I heard, and this, the reason I did this, well, actually, before I even heard Wendy Blight's story, there's this amazing lady that works for Proverbs 31, Wendy Blight. She's an older lady, and her story was a very tough one. Before she was even a believer, she was coming home one night at college from her boyfriend's house, and up the stairs was a masked man, and she was violently raped for hours upon hours and beat. And it took her years to, you know, even be able to take a shower in a house by herself without a trusted friend. And she got up there, and now she reaches just, I don't even know how many hundred, probably hundreds of thousands of women and people, and does the special kind of prayer with groups of ladies and stuff like that. But she said one time one of her friends got up after one of her big speeches in front of a large audience and said, Wendy, if you knew that this is the place that God would bring you this however many years later, and these are all the people that you have helped, would you do it all over again? Mm. Would you go through that all over again? And I think she thought about it. She said she thought about it for a second and she said, yes. Mm. You know? And so when I heard her say that, I immediately started to cry because I've been doing that, like asking myself that for the last, I don't know, probably almost 8 years since the first time I went to the hospital. And I said, because no one's asked me that, but I've told God 100 times over and other people that I've chatted with that I would do it all over again if it meant that this was the only way I would get my two boys.
Yeah,
I do it over and over again, all eight years of it, every last bit of it. And so I started to read because this new book by Sheila Walsh, it's her latest book. It's called Holding On When You Want to Let Go. And guys, I highly recommend this. I'm only in like chapter 4 because I only get to read like one chapter a night right now. Mm-hmm. But she talks about in one part, her faithful mother-in-law grappling with these same questions we're asking. You know, I'm sure we've all asked or at least thought about. And she says, why is heaven silent when we need to hear God's voice? You know, we think about that when you see like this giant earthquake we just, you know, that happened over in Turkey in Syria, you know, why would God hold back healing when he can heal? Does he love some of us less than others? But this is a really, I guess I do just say, I recommend this book. And I know she's got another one before this that's kind of on the same thing. She's suffers with severe clinical depression. She's a, I don't know if I'd say a Bible teacher, but she's a, you know, whatever, a spiritual, she leads all kinds of, you know, conferences and stuff like that. She's pretty cool. I think she's on the, I don't know. Anyway, she's on one of those big networks like TBN or something like that too. But anyway, I think that we only get better at finding God's goodness and not doubting and knowing without a doubt that he is good as we age and go through more trials. And then we remember what he has done for us before. You know, I think that's the only way I've gotten better. Like, and I hate to say it, and I'm like, God, please don't keep doing it. But, you know, and I have to tell you guys that probably about a week before I went to the hospital in December, that was the one thing I hadn't prayed for myself in a while, to be honest with you. I had other people to pray for and stuff like that. That was the one thing I said, don't let me go to the hospital. It had been almost 5 years.
Wow.
I guess I just kind of knew, like in a weird kind of on, I don't know, some my conscious state. But I said, any other way.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't get a choice in that. Yeah. So, but, you know, like I said, I think we only get better as we do, as we go through more hardships and then we remember what he's done for us before. I picked up the devotional, Hannah, that you recommended, Streams in the Desert. And the first one I read talked about an elderly woman lying on her cold bed in an inner city situation, trash everywhere, no heat, no nothing, middle of winter. And she's singing. She's singing the hymn that says, nobody knows the trouble I see. Nobody knows but Jesus. Nobody knows the trouble I see. Sing glory, hallelujah. And it ends with, nobody knows the joy I have. Nobody knows but Jesus. And guys, I have been blessed to meet so many souls like this, especially in the mental hospital. And I can just sit with them and soak up all that wisdom and faith up like a sponge and never get enough. Like they can have absolutely nothing worldly. Some don't even have a friend to their name. And yet they know Jesus. I mean, like truly know Jesus. And I immediately usually feel guilt and shame at the same time because I look at them and their circumstances and their life path and yet their resilience. I'm just amazed by their resilience. And then I immediately think about all my pouty days. And I'm sure God knows about all those, you know, reminds me of all those pouty days too. And realize just how trivial they are. You know, how quick am I to question or even blame God for my poor circumstances, which pale in comparison to these saints? You know, I kind of think like, you know, one day I'm just going to get smacked like Job. That's like, who are you to question God? You know what I mean? But I just wonder like how, and I think, but you know, a lot of the people that met, not all of them were, you know, aged, but a lot of them, if they weren't aged, they've been weathered through just extreme hardships, usually from an early age, you know? And I'm like, but they just have this peace and contentment, even though everything around them says they shouldn't. And that's what I want. Like, I think
that when people have gone through stuff like that, whether they're old or not, like, I think that's what gives them oftentimes credibility in other people's eyes in order to be able to speak about these things. Cause like, if I'm this like young, innocent 18-year-old who's trying to like, I'm not saying that they can't be effective, but like, a lot of times it's people who have been through these horrible things and who have, God has brought them out on the other side, that people can look at them and be like, whoa, look at that person. God has brought them through these like horrible things. And there they are standing up there, like giving their testimony, like still praising God. Like there must be something to this, you know, versus like somebody just talking about like how amazing and faithful God is, who's maybe never even been through something worse than like an acne outbreak in high school. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there's, it gives credibility to that. And I think that's another way that God kind of spins these things that we go through, of like, it makes us have ground to stand on for others to say like, yeah, there's evidence in your life that God's brought you through some stuff.
Right.
So yeah. And that often takes time. You know, I would definitely say that. I mean, I'm not the same person I was 5 to 10 years ago. My faith is nowhere near where it used to be. Like I am leaps and bounds. I mean, nowhere near where I want to be, should be, whatever, but I have grown exponentially through the hard things I've experienced because of what you're saying. Like, you know, and so it's, yeah, it's like that, how the friction produces a pearl or a diamond. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't happen overnight.
Absolutely. And I can almost imagine God saying, Hannah, if you had to go through everything you went through the last 10 years to get to the point where you're at this, in this relationship with me now, mm-hmm. and how you know me now, you would say yes almost immediately.
And I stay in it. I would stay in it. Like right now, I mean, those things. And I mean, and it's funny that you even say that, because I said that to somebody not that long ago. Like I would stay in it if it meant that like the rest of my life looked like that. I would stay in it if it kept me this close to God.
Right.
That hard time, you know, it's just,
and I mean, and that's it, an amazing, you know, thing, just, especially at your young age that you've already.
I am not. You always say that. Like, I'm not that much younger than you, but anyways.
So, you know, like when we're talking about this and I think about, you know, obviously biblical characters, one of the biggest and most famous would be King David and just his roller coaster ride in Psalms. So David is obviously one that is blessed by God. He's the man after God's own heart.
Yeah.
But he's certainly not shy about describing his woes, especially in Psalms, but he's also never praising, you know what I mean? Like he's got both. I'm not saying this necessarily at the same exact time, you know, like, I mean, not, but you know what I mean? Like it's, mm-hmm. so when he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but I find no rest. And guys, that's from Psalms 22. That's 1-2, verse 1-2. And you know what? I thought when I saw this, when I was reading this, I thought, gosh, this is the exact same questions. God, why do you hate me? Why are you so far away? Why are you, you know, why are you not healing me, saving me? And, you know, I love this. I looked because, you know, Hannah was teasing, you know, got to have things in context, which it's just part of my learning, you know, but I mean, obviously that's what we're supposed to do. When I was researching this, you know, it says that this mirrors intentionally when Jesus wrestled with these feelings in the Garden of Gethsemane. Gethsemane. There we go. I even wrote out the little pronunciation. I'm like, I'm going to butcher this still, but that's okay. It's the heart that matters. God knows I cannot pronounce of the stuff. So anyway, but you know, I found that so interesting because you know, obviously in that garden, he says that, my God, he says, Abba. It's the only time he uses that to say, Dad. He uses Abba only in that time. And he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? So if Jesus can say that, Jesus and David can say that, you know, I think that our thoughts are rational at times, you know, and not just thoughts, but emotions.
Jesus cried that out on the cross. I mean, yeah, like that deep emotion is how it felt, so forsaken. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, you know, this is, like I said, a Psalm of David. And there were many instances in the life of David where he might write some agonizing poem, you know, before and after taking maybe the throne of Israel. David lived in seasons of great danger, you know, and deprivation. So they say while this psalm was certainly true of King David and his life experience, it, like many psalms, is even truer of Jesus, the Messiah, then of David. So Jesus deliberately chose these words to describe his agony on the cross in Matthew 27:46. I just find that so interesting. You know, I find that so comforting, you know, that the human, the humanness of Jesus basically asked the same questions that we do.
Knowing
everything, you know, exactly. But he, what is it? Deity? Like, I've been reading a lot and listening a lot about how he suppressed his deity so that he was completely human when he was here. So he's completely God and completely human, but he would suppress his deity. So you got to think in this case, he's obviously suppressing that. He knows, in a way, I guess, because he knows that he said, is there any other way, Father? You know, he knows that he could do it a different way, but he's accepting that. So anyway, but yeah. But I wanted just to continue with the next part of that psalm, because although David is crying out, although David is questioning, he's questioning God's goodness, he circles back to remembering all God has done for him. And that's what we just talked about. All he's done for him and delivered him from. And that's what I was talking about when we endure many trials. As we endure many trials, we have the evidence of what God has brought us through. Maybe not understanding everything, you know, like I said, but we still can see the good that he's brought us through, what he's delivered us from. And David says, but you are holy, enthroned in the praises of Israel. Our fathers trusted in you. They trusted and you delivered them. They cried to you and were delivered. They trusted in you and were not ashamed. And guys, I just have to say one more thing, and Hannah's gonna lead us out. But I loved this quote by Spurgeon. And it says, this is talking about when Jesus not only endured the withdrawal of the Father's fellowship when he was in the garden of, say it for me,
Gethsemane.
Yay. But also the actual outpouring of the Father's wrath upon him as a substitute for sinful humanity. And Spurgeon quotes, this was the blackness and darkness of his horror. Then it was that he penetrated the depths of the caverns of suffering. I can't believe I just said that without like stuttering, but I just love that. And I know that's hard to think about, because me and Hannah were actually kind of discussing that, but that, you know, that Jesus took the wrath from his Father to substitute for our sin. The man that did not sin took on our sin.
So it's funny, you were talking about that psalm and just kind of the, why have you forsaken me? Why are you not answering me? And that was one of the things that when I had done the Google search of like, why does God not answer prayer? Like, people are asking, like, you know, what is going on? And there are a lot of things that I think that can happen that feel very much like God's ignoring us, or that he's silent, or that he's just not there.
But he's always working.
Oh, 100%.
He's always working on our behalf.
And that is the thing. And one of the things that I've learned, and I know people say this all the time, but I think this kind of goes along with what you were saying, Darcy, about, like, you know, one of the ways that we get better at, you know, being able to trust God in these situations is remembering what he's done for us in the past, which obviously comes with time, you know. But I think also with prayer, it's thinking about all the ways that, like you're saying, he could be working in the background. Like, God very rarely lets us in on what he's doing while he's doing it. I mean, like, 99.9% of the things that he has taught me or that I have learned have come later. Like, I'll look back on something and be like, oh, now I realize why I had to go through that thing, or why, you know, this thing happened the way that it did. It's usually not in the moment where God's like, well, I'm doing this. He doesn't, like, usually explain himself in the moment, right? Like, he just doesn't, and he doesn't have to. Like, he doesn't owe us that. And so I think it's important for us to remember, like, you know, God's holiness, and he is sovereign, and but if we trust in who he is and the fact that he is good, and we know that beyond every single shadow of a doubt that could ever come up in our mind or heart from Satan tempting us to believe otherwise, if we know in the depths of our soul that God is good and he is who he says he is, then even when these horrible things happen, it does not cause us this. We might for a moment feel like, oh my gosh, like this moment of panic, right? But like in the depths of our soul, though, we're not shaken the same way that maybe we would be if we weren't sure of his goodness. So one of my favorite hymns is It Is Well With My Soul. And just the lyrics of the first verse are just, when peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. And I sing this to my babies when I rock them to sleep sometimes. The melody of it is just so beautiful. And it has truly become, I mean, I was raised on hymns. It was just, I love them. But this is truly like, I've come to this place where it's like, no matter what happens, even like in these worst of times where it's, I can honestly say that I feel like, I'm like, okay, God, like whatever it is that you have, whatever it is that's going to happen to me tomorrow, I fully trust you. Like, I feel contentment. I'm not going to be kicking and screaming and fighting every moment of this hard thing, right? Like, it is well because I know that you're in control and you're good and you've got this. And whatever bad things I'm facing are not they do not tell me who you are. You tell me who you are. Your word tells me who you are. And nothing that this world can bring or nothing that happens in this world tells me about who God is, right? Those are all the reflections of evil that is in this world. It's all those can lead us away from the true nature of who God is. And so,
Hannah, you are amazing, first of all. Because when you were just saying about that situation, you know, like when you go through stuff, I'm thinking, okay, well, to be honest, like, because I'm very honest, very transparent. You know, I certainly believe all those things. I know that God is going to work it all out for my good, but I've got to have my pouty day. Like when things don't go my way.
Well, yeah, I mean,
we got to have a pouty day, like a pouty day through all of my conversations with God, through my praying, like even in that journal, I write, there might be some all caps going on. Like, I am not kidding.
I don't want to give off the impression that I like never feel doubt or that I'm like always like, yay.
No, trials. I don't.
Like,
I don't,
but
think you do.
What you were saying, like, I think that there's this, been this refining period in my life that I'm just like, I'm like not even surprised anymore. Like sometimes, and I'm just like, okay, cool, another thing. Okay, God. Like, I think I'm just like,
that's great. Just add it to my list.
It's
great.
You know what? Like, just we might as well just have it all at one time, because then, you know, it's like when it rains and it pours, and it's great. We can just get it all over with at one time. No, but I love that you also mentioned the concept of actively choosing to remember the good things God has done for us. That's like the only way that I get through stuff now, and the only way I'm truly able to say it as well with my soul, because I can look back on God's unfailing faithfulness through everything and the ways that he's brought me so close to himself that the rest of the world truly just fades away. I'd rather have that than like the easiest, most pleasant life this world could afford. You know, so yeah.
I mean, you know, like if he wanted to sit me on a beach with a nice, you know, house behind me and stuff, like, I mean, that would also be different. That. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just rambling. But, you know, like, do not, guys, use me as an example. But I like to tell you guys the truth, one, to make you laugh. But two, just so you know that, you know, it's okay. It's okay if we're not, you know, perfect. It's okay if we're not praising. We're human. We're perfectly human, you know? It's okay if we're not praising every day. That's I mean, look at the Psalms, look at David, look at his roller coaster ride of emotions. I mean, I probably got him beat, but I'm just saying. You know, he's pretty up and down. Some people have pegged him as bipolar or whatever, which, you know, whatever, that's up and down. So anyway, but there's nothing wrong with that either. But I will say, and I wasn't going to add this, but talking about unanswered prayers, because when I saw the two, that was one of the searched Google things. I will tell you guys that one of the biggest things, and this is one of the things I always remember. Remember how I told you that I would go through everything I went through if it meant that I had my boys, my two sons. And guys, God He does seem silent for a while. Like, I remember after what I went through with Austin, and they titled it postpartum psychosis, and it was like, you know, they said I could have a kid, and obviously they scared the crap out of me about having a kid again. And I just prayed for probably, what was it, a year and a half, 2 years straight? No, 3 years. Yeah, 3 years actually, for a redo. Those were my exact words. I said, God, a redo. When it came to like having a baby, I wanted my second child. I always wanted two children at least. And I said, I want a redo. And guys, I found out, and we did not intentionally get pregnant because honestly, the doctors were just like, just not a good idea. I found out I was pregnant with my redo 3 years. 3 years, exact date from when I was first hospitalized. That's the day I found out I was pregnant.
You
So,
really took that redo real seriously.
seriously, and that little boy looked just like his brother. So,
But then you had a second hospitalization, right?
yeah, it was a while after.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know. I
No,
couldn't remember
no,
the
no,
timeline.
no. That was the one back in December.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, when I got pregnant with him, I had no issues
You had
and
a true redo.
nothing, right? So, anyway, I'm just saying, he's a
That
good
helps.
God. And I always remember that. And he calls me out a lot because, like I said, I have my pouty days, my pouty moments. But anyway, we hope you enjoyed our conversation today. So, guys, if you are, you know, getting something out of this little invaluable, tell a friend and follow us up on social at Therapy in 10 for Facebook and on Instagram at Therapy underscore in underscore 10. And subscribe to our podcast on your favorite listening app. We guys hope you have a fabulous, uneventful week when it comes to trials.
Yes.